Yeah, my name's Jeff. I'm an alcoholic. I guess the best way to start off is I want you to try to relate to my feelings. Don't try to compare on what I did because I'm not some go further than others, and I just want that to be known. It's a long thing. I'm just going into the other room because my birds want to get on. It's the type of thing that I had a lot of problems when I was growing up. I had a sister, and she died when she was 3 months old, and I was four, and I started not understanding things then. I didn't understand death, obviously, my age, but that was only the start. That was a very traumatic experience I had, and I suffered from flashbacks from that because of it. And it's just it's part of why and who I am. It then got even worse. I was about six, and my babysitter, she was 15, and she tried to have sex with me. Obviously, it didn't work. She wasn't that brilliant student in health. It just wasn't possible for 6-year-old to perform. That was another traumatic experience that I had flashbacks from. And it's just this is again part of my makeup. It gets to I've been sober twice as long as I lived before, almost. It's just before I'm just trying to relate some things that happened before I even picked up the drink. Other than when I was a kid, I was born in the 50s, so when you were teething and stuff, they used to rub whiskey on your gums and stuff like that. But I don't know if that's really an official start of my drinking or not. It's just like it's I'm just trying to get you to understand that there's a lot of other things besides the actual drinking that was my problem. And so to get into where I started, where I call my official introduction to alcohol, was I was about 15, and all my friends were getting into trouble with the police and for underage drinking and doing drugs. And so my parents got the idea that if they let me have a couple of beers while I was watching a hockey game on a Saturday night, that maybe I wouldn't go out and hang around with them and get in trouble. The only problem with that was from the start, even then, I had a different idea of what drinking was. My dad opened up the first beer for me, and I downed it before the first whistle was blown in the hockey game. And he said, and I asked him for another one, and he said, "Well, you really got to pace yourself." I said, "I am." I said, "I thought it was perfect timing." I said, "They blew the whistle. There's a commercial. I can go get a beer now." It just that's the way I drank. Like when it started, I just wanted more and more and more. But I was never a daily drinker. I was a binge drinker, and therefore I could go for long periods without drinking, but I always was thinking of how I was going to drink. It was constantly on my mind was how can I scam alcohol out of other people. And I did that very well. And it's just another example is when I turned 18, which was the drinking age where I was, like any normal social drinker, I was working part-time and I saved up all my paychecks for 2 months to go out on that one birthday. And I spent it all. I was to suffer from what I call a bad hamburger that night, because the one place I stopped in at that time, you couldn't order beer in the restaurant without having something to eat. So that's why I called it a bad hamburger, because I ended up being sick. I started off in a place called Oshawa at Harry's Hideaway. And when the waitress got to me, she said, "What are you drinking?" And I said, "Beer." And she said, "What kind?" And I said, "I don't know, what do you got?" And so she said, I said, "What's the most common?" And she said, "Draft." I said, "Oh, that's what I got started on." And it just that night, I suffered from being sick. I suffered hangover in the morning. And I also had to work that day. I also suffered blackout, not for the total night or anything, but just, I remember parts of the night. I don't remember other parts. My last place that I went to, I got a cab, and it was a driver that my mom knew. And he said that I was the best drunk he ever had in his cab, because he said he was quiet, he wasn't sick, and he was a good tipper. So he liked that. So that's how my mom found out parts of the story that I don't know, because I didn't know that. I was close to home at my last stop, so I walked home rather than take another cab. And when I got home, I got into the front door, and we had a little like there was carpeting in the hallway, but there was a little place at the front door that was tile and stuff, so that you didn't get snow or mud or whatever on the carpet. So, but I did. I threw up there. While my dad was patting me on the head while I was throwing up, I said, "I'm never going to drink again." And he says, now, he says, it's a little early to be saying something like that. And he was right, because like I said, I worked in a grocery store, and I worked in the parcel pickup, which I don't know if you've ever seen one of those, but it's, you buy the groceries inside the store, and then they go up rollers and belts and come down, and their rollers make a hell of a noise when you got a hangover. But I survived that day, and it wasn't too long after that that I went back to drinking again, just like my dad thought I would. And that's the way I drank, was to get the most into me that I could. That's why, like I said, like it was, I saved up all those paychecks and I blew it all in one night. And it's just, that's, to me, that's not having any kind of control over alcohol. It's definitely alcohol had a control over me, and it didn't get any better. Later on, I started threatening to run out onto the 401, which was, it's a like a major interstate highway type thing, and I was going to commit suicide, and they would grab me before I climbed over the fence and stop me. But I don't know whether I really meant it or not. I know that it was the alcohol that was talking, that's just the way I was. Once I started drinking, I had no control. I could not tell you how the night was going to happen. I tried controlled drinking. One party I was at, I tried to just have a bottle of beer, but not drinking in a glass, like just out of the bottle. And I had one beer, And then I would run up to the bathroom and I would fill it up with water. And I kept doing that all night. And then everybody starts talking to me like, where's Jeff? Where is he? This isn't the Jeff we know. What's wrong? I didn't know until I just told them, like, I don't know what you're talking about. It's me. And they noticed a difference. And it brings me back to when I was a kid. I had a great uncle that had a problem with alcohol. He would drink it until he started throwing up blood. And then he would take the pills. And then when it started feeling better, he'd start taking the pills with alcohol again. And then he'd be off them. And it would all start all over again. And with him, I had the same thing. I often ask my parents, what's wrong with Uncle Sam? He's acting different. I was later to find out that was because he was sober. 99% of the time he was drunk. So I only knew him in a drunk way. So I had no idea that wasn't normal. When he was sober, that was abnormal to me. And that's the way I am. I have no control over it. It's a thing that has total effect over me, and I can't do without it. It's just like I was told when I came into AA, it said like it's an allergy, and I believe that. But the difference between this allergy is, if you're allergic to strawberries, you stay away from strawberries. But I'm allergic to alcohol, and I can't get enough. Okay, it's just once it's in me, I have to have more. And like I said, I can't predict outcomes. I've swore and swore and swore, stack of Bibles on my kids' lives, everything, like that I'd be better and I'd have control this night. And I have one beer or something, and then that's the whole thing rolling again. And I don't have control. And then my wife is mad at me. And saying like you swore on your kids and you swore on the Bible and all this stuff and you can't do it. Like what's wrong with your willpower? And I said, I don't know. But when I came into AA, my sponsor told me, anybody that tells you that it's only a thing of willpower, says, no, I have to put a disclaimer on this because nowadays people come back and sue you, never try this at home. But his example was, if you take a bottle of X-lax and swallow it, try to will yourself not to go. It's not going to happen. It's got nothing to do with willpower. I know now that it was a fact that I was bankrupt physically, spiritually, and mentally, and I still have trouble with the mental part. There's things that I'm dealing with. But anyways, I'll get to my last drunk. And the last drunk was a fact of, I don't know what that is outside. It was a typical thing. I spent 4 hours at a bar. And I was drinking pretty heavy, and I came home and nobody was home. And I heard the music on next door, and I went next door and the party was on. And this guy had just gotten a big bonus at his work and everything. And they had invented this drink called B-52 at that time. And we were drinking them in beer glasses, but we were drinking them like B-52s. So I was chugging them down, and that's when that night starts going in and out is because I can see myself picking up the drink, and the only way I know how many drinks I had is because every time I had a drink, they dropped in a cherry, and one of those little maraschino cherries. And so when I was done drinking, there were six of them on the bottom of the glass. So that's 16 ounces times six. is a lot of alcohol to be drinking, chugging, and so I needed to get out of that house, and I went up to the, we were in a townhouse complex, and there was a main complex that was in a circle, and there was an offshoot of 11 houses that were in a straight line, and I was in number 5. I went to number 1 to talk to this guy, and he had to play hockey the next day, so he kicked me out of there. And I tried to get from number 1 to number 5, but I didn't make it. I ended up stopping at number 3. And I started, my key wouldn't work, so I started pounding on the door trying to get in. And then all of a sudden a cop shows up. And then another cop shows up, and they start talking to me and asking me if I knew what my car looked like and what was it, what was I trying to do? I was trying to get into my house. I think my wife changed the locks in between the party and when I got home. They said, can you describe your car? I did. And they said, is that like the one that's just a couple doors down? I said, yeah, what's it doing there? I said, I don't know why it's there. Anyways, so they knew that I was absolutely out of my head and with alcohol. So they said, like you should just take it easy and stop disturbing these people and go to your home and then see if the key works there. And I did, and it did. So I did. It worked, but I was so ashamed because I've never been in trouble with the law, never been arrested, never been charged with anything, and not one but two police officers were called on me that night. And that night I also found out that my wife had been sleeping with the guy in the townhouse beside me, where I was at the party, So I just decided that in my sound mind and body that I'm not worth living on this earth. And I took a handful of sleeping pills and I ended up changing my mind. But because I was so polluted, I didn't do the simple thing, which would have been put your finger down the throat and make yourself sick. No, I didn't do that. I ran up the street and I tried to get help to get me to the hospital because it wasn't too far away. And I got one car swerved to miss me, and another car finally stopped for me. And I was hanging on to the side of the window, and I asked the guys that were probably 16, 17, just teenagers out for a night, and I just asked him. I said, I need to get to the hospital. And I didn't tell him what I did. I just said, I need to get to the hospital. And that's when they started trying to take off. Well, I was still hanging on to the window in the car, and I started running along the street with them. And I ended up there. It goes, like I'm talking about over by the 401 again, and there's a bridge that goes over the 401, and there's an OPP station there, which is a police station for the province of Ontario. And they asked me what happened. I told them. I said, my wife's leaving me, and I had the police called on me tonight, and I decided to try and commit suicide. So they got an ambulance, and when they pumped my stomach out, all there was left was a diet of the pills. So all the pills were in my system, all the booze was in my system, and I don't have any record of what my blood alcohol was that night, but I do have family report that went to my doctor, or the report from the hospital that went to my family doctor, and they said I had two medical choices, and that was either to be dead or a vegetable case in a hospital bed. That was my two medical options. So I don't have a problem with a higher power as such. Mine may be a little different from yours, but that's okay. All we ask you for in AA is to find a power greater than you. It can be like a group of drunks. It can be good orderly direction. It can be anything. It can be a light bulb. For a while, I had a doorknob, but then it turned on me, so I stopped it. It's just in AA, in the book, it tells you that you may get back to your religious beliefs. Just a second. On that same night, while I was running alongside the car, I had an out-of-body experience, and I was up in the air, and I was watching myself, and it was all in black and white, like an old B movie, and I could see myself running alongside this car and everything. So that is another reason why I don't have a problem with a higher power. But back to the thing, it's just like the other thing I was told is you don't like if you want to get rid of your garbage, all you got to do is set it out on the curb. It's usually a guy that comes around once a week and picks it up. But if you want to go all the way to the garbage dump to make sure that it gets there, that's okay. You can take that route too. Now, I don't believe that I have the worst bottom, but I do believe that my bottom brought me to AA because I was given a second chance at life. That I believe. I then came into AA, but it took me another month because I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just didn't have any knowledge. I didn't think there was anything wrong with my drinking. I thought I was drinking normally, but I wasn't. And so my head started spinning around because I wasn't drinking, and I did something that a lot of people say that you shouldn't do. And that's just quit. Okay. They say that you can go through withdrawals and stuff, and you can have seizures and stuff if you're not medically watched and stuff. But I didn't know how to quit. I didn't know about all this stuff until I got into AA. But I wouldn't suggest it for a way of doing it. It's just cold turkey. You should have at least a family doctor, if not a being able to go to a rehab. But when I quit drinking, there wasn't that many rehabs in Ontario. They usually sent you down to the state somewhere. And so I just didn't go to a rehab. I did the thing. I quit on my own. I went to AA because I asked a lady at work. She told me, I knew that I'd heard all sorts of stories about her reading in encyclopedias and dictionaries just to increase her vocabulary. And so I thought she was a really smart lady, and she was. She had been waiting for me to ask for help. She wanted me to ask for help before she would offer it, and I did. And she and her boyfriend took me to my first AA meeting. And as I was going down the stairs of the church to the basement, I saw a sign saying, "You are no longer alone." And that really helped me that night because I was feeling alone. I was feeling so alone that I didn't know which way to turn. I heard a good speaker that night. He had just gone through a divorce, and I hadn't started mine, but I was going to. And I talked to the guy after the meeting, and he gave me a big book, and he signed it, and I still got that book. That's over 40 years ago. I don't remember a lot about the meeting other than that. I remember listening to him, I remember hearing that you repeated certain things. And I heard that when somebody introduced themselves, you said hi back, but I don't remember a lot of the steps, traditions, or any of the readings that were read. I just remember the speaker and numb. And it's just, I knew I belonged where I belonged. The only other organization I ever belonged to was the Legion. And the only reason I joined it is because of the cheap booze. I did not join it to honor our veterans. But it's just like that, that's the way I am. And it's just, that's the way I found how to drink. For nothing is listening to old war stories, and you could drink out of somebody's jug of draft and it didn't cost you anything. And I knew who to hook up to play shuffleboard with, because I could always win double scotches all night. And it's just like, that's the way I was. I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief. But when I came to AA and I heard this guy, I knew that I was in the right place. And it just gets better. Like, it's not fast. You'll find that out by the end of the story, but it's just, I'm trying to keep this as short as it is, but I'm 67 and I quit when I was almost 27. So it's a lot of stuff to get in between, but it's just, I found the people that I got along with. I fought for 23 years in my sobriety to find religion again, and I couldn't. The closest thing I could come to was, I believe, in the Native ways, giving back to the earth instead of just raping it like we do now. That's why I call my higher power my creator, and it's just it's been fantastic, but I'm a slow learner. So like like it says in the promises, they guarantee the promises, but sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I'm the slowly one, and it was only 6 years ago. My daughter got a hold of me on Facebook, and I don't know how she figured it out it was me, other than the stuff that I put in the profile, because I was using my native name then, because I was given a native name by a spiritual healer, and it's Running Wolf. That's why, the night that I had the out-of-body experience, I don't know whether it was God, Jesus, an angel, or the spirit of the wolf, because I now believe that the my spirit guide is the white wolf, it's my belief. You don't have to believe that, but all I ask you for is to believe in something greater than you. Because things will happen. Like I said, like my daughter got a hold of me, and I tried to get a hold of my son through my daughter, like through her Facebook. I put a friend request in, and last December he got back to me again, slowly, but it worked. And that was one of the greatest presents I had for my birthday, was getting back in touch with my son. I hadn't heard from him in 40 years, and it's just it's all of what you can get if you just stay for one more meeting. Just don't drink or drug for one more day, or break it down even finer if you need it. But I couldn't plan what I got now. I don't have much. I'm not rich. I'm on a small pension. I'm retired. It took me 2 years to fight for that pension. I was on welfare for 2 years, but I didn't pick up a drink. I've buried a lot of people, sober and drunk, in my 40 years, and I still didn't have to pick up a drink. I've buried family members, and it's just, I can't think of a reason that's good enough that I would want all that misery back again. Because I know from telling you guys that my story that it seems like there's a lot of bad times, and there is. I mean, this is life. This is life on life's terms, and I don't have a prediction of what's going to happen. I wish my connection with higher power was closer, and that I could automatically believe that it's going to be different. But the only time I can understand that it is going to be different is when I look back. Because every time I look back, I know that higher power was there. It's like an old poem I've read. It's called Footprints, and it talks about there's two sets of footprints, and then in my hardest times there's only one set. And then the guy asks the Lord, why Lord did you let me go on by myself? And he says, no, my son, I was carrying you then. That's what I believe in. I believe that a higher power has given me a second chance at life. My two medical options are either dead or a vegetable case in a hospital bed because of the amount of drugs and alcohol I had on my last drunk. And I haven't found it necessary to try to commit suicide since then, because I believe that I was taking the chicken way out, not the brave way like some people think. I wasn't brave enough to commit suicide. That my mind doesn't sit. That's the coward's way out. You don't realize how many people you're going to hurt when you do something like that. Every alcoholic, I've been told, has affected at least 5 people's lives in a bad way. It goes even more than that when you start talking about suicide, because everybody wants to ask questions. Why did they do it? Why did they do it? And I don't have a reason. I have an excuse. I was ashamed because the cops were called on me, and my wife was going to leave me. It's not a reason. That's an excuse. But it, like I said, like if you stay long enough for the miracle to happen, it will. But you just can't give up. And I'm not really the kind of guy that likes being up front. I speak when I'm asked to speak, or lead, or whatever you want to call it. I'm not one to volunteer to chair. I will chair a meeting if somebody doesn't show up and nobody else wants to take it, then sure, I'll chair. But I'd rather be behind the scenes. That's the way that I've always been in AA. Like when I came into AA, I was the guy you would see at the back door shaking hands and stuff. And I made coffee and all the things and set up chairs and stuff. And well, I'm that old. We used to put out ashtrays. it's just, but just, I like the service behind the scenes. Some people are better in elected positions for service, like your group rep or stuff like that. And that's great. We have to have those people, but we need the people to put on the meetings. And we're just starting to get back to some face-to-face meetings here. Some are doing what they call fusion. They're doing the face-to-face, but they're also staying on Zoom. And some are just going face-to-face. We have lost a lot of groups in our area because of COVID. And it's just, we're slowly building back up again. It's the same with the, if you're going to just Zoom meetings, we need people to help there too. We need people to open up the rooms. We need people to host the meetings. And we need people to run slides for groups that have slides and stuff. And I've done all that stuff. And it's just like, I feel that I, like I said, I was given a second chance at life. And what more could I do but to give back to the people that were responsible for me? And the first one is AA. The second one is Salvation Army. I when I had the car accident and I ended up fighting 2 years to get my pension, I was indebted to them. I help out with them when they need me. I do kettles at Christmas time, and I just do it on a voluntary basis, and it's just like. I want to give back to them. I want to give back to AA because those are the two people that were there when I was at my darkest. And I don't know. I'm trying to keep this short. I'm going to shut up now. Thanks.